welcome to the next episode of Research VR, where we dig deep beyond the realms of virtual reality. I am your usual co-host, Peter Lakoff, and I'm joined today by Krzysztof Zdebski.
Heyo!
And also today we are joined by the wonderful, wonderful Rolf Behrens from Bitnamic.
Hi there.
And Bitnamic is a small startup in Osnabrück that exists since 1.5 years and is focusing on AR industrial applications. Is that correct?
No, it's correct. We are focusing on smart service solutions for especially the maintenance part of companies. So imagine where a lot of maintenance is needed for complex machines. We are developing smart services software for this. And now with some devices which just came out, like the HoloLens, there are a lot of new possibilities for us where we can develop, and I think we can achieve a lot in the future.
Mm-hmm. Now, you most likely didn't start in the AR field in the first place, right? What's your background?
So we had a common research project with the University of Applied Sciences Osnabrück. I worked there back in the days. And we were working together with Airbus in Bremen, and they had, you know, an area of non-destructive testing fields, and they wanted to connect experts in the service offices with technicians in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And they needed, you know, a live video and a good impression what's going on site to see the status of the actual aircraft. Of course, technology has evolved a lot, but back in the days, we challenged a lot of bandwidth issues, which are not even nowadays solved.
Well, especially in Germany.
Yeah, especially
and
in Germany.
Around the world.
And of course, imagine a desert or something like this, when the aircraft needs maintenance and we have to deal with very limited bandwidth.
Well, I mean, if the airplane is in the hangar, you kind of have to skill people. But if it's in the middle of nowhere, that's exactly the case where you kind of need the maintenance, right?
Yeah. So what we were focusing on were we had a lot of measurement instruments, for example, on site, but we didn't have the connection to transfer all the information to the service offices. And then our research project started, and we focused a lot of on the connectivity side. We worked a lot with adaptable bandwidth paradigms and stuff like this. So we had really a lot of success in delivering, of course, also video data on Edge. And
so Edge is the slowest connection.
Edge is the slowest connection, which is possible. So you don't expect a full HD movie right there with 25 seconds. It's 25 frames per second.
So is Edge 2G?
Edge is 2G.
Okay.
Edge is 2G, yes. So you need this kind of connection at least to establish a small video. And
that's quite impressive. I mean, usually my websites don't load anymore if I have Edge. And you managed to transport video signals. How did you do it?
Of course, you can limit always the bandwidth params like color depth and frames per second, bit rate, stuff like this. And a lot is also achieved when you, you know, separate the audio channel from the video channel. So every technician has also a second telephone with them. So you can place a just normal phone call. Our system knows the metadata and can call the technician on site on his phone. And with another connection, he can send his video. So all the data available on the data channel is there for the video. So you have basically every bit available for the video stream. And our system knows everything about the technician, where's he in the field, what's his name, what's his role in the company. And then, of course, the mobile number is known, and he's called on his phone. And so he can use all the other traffic available for his video signal. And then we ported our solution back in the days from just normal Windows software to the browser. We had a browser-based solution, which is very important in companies. Imagine all the IT guys there mm-hmm. with restrictions everywhere. You don't, or you cannot install anything on the PCs. You mm-hmm. you need always administrative rights for this.
Exactly, and especially in the context of industry, you usually have yep. compliance, and you are a little bit more limited than a usual company. Even like you have a lot of fraud, you have a lot of possibilities yep. of data stealing, and you just, and especially in the context of industry, you have a lot of compliance and, you know.
What's also very important is that if you have to install software for any solution and it's in the field, for example,
mm-hmm.
Is there, for example, the installs software, the setup shield already available on the, mm-hmm. on the PC, stuff like this. And we rethought this back in 2010. And offered a full browser-based solution.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean?
Just open the URL in the browser.
Ah, yes.
And you're good to go. You don't need anything to install.
So you get a video feed.
Videos, camera access, stuff like this. But mm-hmm. also we have a small tool to share the desktop, stuff like this already. All this mm-hmm. based back in 2010. It was Flash-based. Back in the days, and no, of course, we are focusing on HTML5, got rid of Flash, mostly.
Well, I mean, Flash is usually a pain in the ass for everyone, right?
Exactly.
So you kind of are trying to do what exactly...
But it wasn't too bad for videos, for live videos, but...
But because you are obligated to have the Flash software installed, you already have vulnerabilities,
exactly.
Which unfortunately, even though for video, it seems to work, or it seemed to work very good. It's kind of a very limiting factor.
Well, the problem would be that if you didn't have Flash yet, you would have to install it with Edge.
Exactly.
Which is
a try to do it, right? It's not easy.
Played into our hands that Flash was mostly installed on Airbus PCs. So that wasn't really an issue for us. But, I was so lucky when WebRTC and technologies like this came out, and they offered us a lot of new features to, you know, send images, videos directly from the browser, from your camera, to a distant site. And it's not perfect, still not mm-hmm. perfect, but it's good enough right now. And you can do a lot in browsers, modern browsers nowadays.
Yes, I mean, even WebVR.
Yep.
Shows that you can play already virtual reality in the whole.
Oh, there was this cool experience we saw in Upload.
Yes.
Where you had HTC Vive, HoloLens, or even two HoloLenses and controllers from HTC Vive all connected through WebVR. And with HoloLens, you could see a helmet of a Vader on the one guy and a helmet of the trooper on the other guy, and controllers were lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
And the servers running all the graphics, all the calculation, were going through WebVR
mm-hmm.
and shipped between the devices.
It's awesome what browsers are capable
of. But before we go to HoloLens and IR,
yeah.
I think I should also maybe ask you the question, what's your stance regards VR? And what you, I think, didn't mention before, what did you study?
Okay.
And how was your first IR experience?
Okay. So, I've studied computer science here in Osnabrück. I have my master's degree here.
Mm-hmm.
And then founded my company here based on the research we did together with Airbus. And Airbus encouraged us, okay, we have a great product here. Guys, what do you think? Do you want to make a startup out of it? And they were kindly enough to support us mm-hmm. with their expertise, stuff like this. And we have had, of course, to do some modifications to the software because it was mainly focused on, you know, aerospace-specific things.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are doing here in Germany is mostly building complex machines.
Yeah.
And, we had to do a small transition, but we have completed this. And one of the first steps was, of course, to bring the software from the browsers to smartphones. This was our first step.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the first experiences with augmented reality.
What do you mean by augmented reality?
Exactly.
I already have a feeling that's a trigger point right now for most of the, our audience.
So, technically speaking, in terms of 2013, we're using some tablet or a smartphone device with the camera, or you can also use just a standard laptop. And what we did was, you know, there are some great and very complex measurement instruments in the aerospace industries, and they want to look inside the materials, like you know, your wing, for example, can look from the outside perfectly normal and it's good, but they could be damaged, or it could be damaged from the inside. And then what we have to do is to look into the material.
And so like micro scanning and...
You know, it's thermographical scans or ultrasonic scans, stuff like this. And if you do this, you have to perform a lot of scans. And
What kind of scans?
Thermographical scans, where you just heat up the material and you can look inside the materials, or where you do some ultrasonic scans where you just put a big machine onto the wing or onto the, onto the surface, and then start a scan, you look into the material and you see something. And if you do this on a wing, for example, for Airbus, there's one ideal way. You can, if you don't follow this specific way, you waste a lot of time because you have multiple scans in the same area of the wing, for example. And what we did is to we showed in our AR the best way how to scan.
So was it showing which button you should press next?
Yeah. So we did this with a lot of markers, stuff like this, and where to put the markers everywhere. It was complicated, but it was a nice proof of concept, so we could show.
And it was running on a tablet.
It was running on a tablet, exactly. So, but it was nice to get a first impression of this.
And did you have to program this whole tracking yourself, or did you rely maybe on Vuforia or any other libraries?
I don't know if Vuforia was available back in the days. What was the...
When was the project?
2013, there was the other kind, or what's his name?
Matteo?
Yeah, exactly. This was it.
Yes.
And there were
how did you steps. Transit from Matteo to something else?
We didn't. this work was done, and we were glad. Okay, it worked. It was a nice proof of concept. We had a great demonstration inside of Airbus. We got a lot of applause. But this never made it to an actual product. But
why do you think so?
It was too complex.
For whom?
For the end user.
To set it up. Place all the markers.
I don't think the laptop would be a problem because every technician has a laptop there, so you could look on the laptop. But this whole marker thing, this needs a lot of training. It's not intuitive. So what you have to do is train him how to use markers. He must get an understanding why markers are important. Stuff like this. And, you know, technicians at Airbus are not always very young, so there are a lot of experienced guys with they know a lot, but they've never seen markers before.
Sure.
So what should we do? Train everyone to use markers? And that was just a little bit too crazy.
Okay, definitely. But the need was in general there, right?
It is. It is still there. So, because you can do a lot wrong when performing, you know, measurements with those measurement devices. And then I think let's move on to 2014. I think was 2014 was the year when Google, I think, announced the glasses. I don't know.
Google Glasses.
So 2014 or 2013.
I'll check.
Another episode of Petra at Google.
I'm the core Googler.
And I think that was the time when Airbus first asked us if there is any solution for smart glasses available. And, well, there weren't.
Actually, February 2013 for developers and in 2013 for public, but to Germany it obviously made after 1 year.
But when Airbus asked us what's the status about the glasses,
so they were fascinated and saw a use case.
Of course, they had also, of course, a few research projects going on where they have already used it.
Did you actually work with Google Glass, or you started with Vuzix and stayed with Vuzix?
Yes, we just had a pair for a few days, I think, but no, we weren't able to, transfer our software to Google Glass. It was too complex, and there wasn't really the need for it then, or the pain wasn't too big that I was any other customer would take the money.
It's expensive. You need to get the glasses, which were, what was it,
1,500, 1,500.
So a lot of money, and also not very easy accessible in terms of they didn't really sell them properly for a long time, right? Do you think, and this is rather a question to you because you understand the industry, that the industrial users are in general a lot of times tricked by a lot of marketing videos to believe the technology that would release their needs is there. I'm not speaking about the software. Because from the software side, you either have the software running or not. And you can maybe overpromise a little bit, but you have to show it. At least my perception was in a lot of fairs that what the manufacturers of IR glasses tend to show, especially when they are those old established ones, is something magical and amazing that I just can't believe myself can work. Is it something that you also perceive, or am I completely wrong?
It's a strong both. they are sometimes a little bit blind because we all are. So there's a new fancy video going on, and they promise, the best solution possible. And
I will link in the show notes a video. I think it is from, what is it, Postbank? No. I will link it in the show notes. There is a video that shows a proof of concept that is like completely rendered. Like this is not happening. There is some kind of tracker going around through a construction and picking up things, and everything looks great, but it's fake.
Completely. Yeah, it's mostly fake. That's the problem with marketing videos. It's always fake.
Yeah.
When you're diving, or when you get into the real world, none of this is possible. Yeah. You have all those limitations. That crappy CPU and the memory is way too,
And then
limited.
We stand on Cebit and customers are coming to us and saying, can you do this thing with HoloLens for me? And we are just looking at them totally confused and struggling with saying, this is absolutely not possible.
I mean, where do those ideas come from? From all those great, awesome, very beautiful marketing videos. And also, I mean, when I first saw your solution, I think I was on the Innovate that you won last year or 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. And I was thinking, okay, that makes sense. That's something I can imagine. It works and it creates a benefit. And I also don't see really the hardware limitation. Okay, I was kind of not sure if you really can push the video through 2G, which you can, I witness it, but it was, maybe they were promising here and there, but still good. But if you show something completely fake, completely rendered, and you create, feeling that there is a solution, then on the one hand, the customer is not getting the solution because it's not there yet. On the other hand, he's not getting something from me or you, that might have helped him already, whether it's IR or VR solutions, right? So just to make sure to all the folks out there that are, super hyped about augmented reality, I mean, we are still not there to have super awesome, functioning, beautiful, perfect designed, affordable, and so on devices, right?
So, maybe if you need some comparison, just remember the first iPhone. Well, you had 2G connection. You had there was no app store. You had nothing. Just a browser, email program, stuff like this, and it took us a great amount of time to see good progress. Of course, the devices always got better and better and better.
Yeah,
and better.
It took them 3 to 4 years.
Of course. And now we are there where, we're thinking of what can we do even better with the smartphone.
Yeah,
so
but it's already quite good.
It's a quite good device. So I still have my iPhone 6, which is now 2 years old. And I'm still using it, and I think I will use it for another year.
Is it 6 or 6S?
It's a 6.
Okay.
So just a 6, and
Yeah, but I mean, that's what Apple makes, right? You kind of don't care about the hardware so much.
It must not be an iPhone, but I think an Android phone would also be okay for me if it's just good enough for my needs, you know?
Exactly, but we don't have these devices with AR. I mean, a lot of people are super hyped or are super disappointed by the HoloLens. And I guess we'll come to that also.
Yeah.
We can move the discussion actually to the end. So what did you do in 2014?
We've ported everything to smartphones. We use tablets, smartphones, and we started utilizing HTML5. WebRTC was there, kind of still in a beta phase. You had to start Chrome with some beta flags, stuff like this. No, you couldn't sell it. Basically, you couldn't sell this. So, okay, still using Flash in the real world, but experimenting with WebRTC and or other video technologies in the development phase.
Mm-hmm.
But then WebRTC got more stable and we focused a lot on modifying our video infrastructure and the delivery of our media channels. And then we discovered the Vuzix smart glasses, which is basically a smartphone because it just runs Android, plain Android. And with the Vuzix smart glasses, we were able to compile our software to the Vuzix. Of course, we had to do a lot of modifications to our user interface because we have a very small screen. For all the listeners here who don't know what the Vuzix is, it's the Android-based smart glasses where you have a small screen in front of your eye. It covers your eye, so it's not a look-through device. It's a screen in front of your eye. But the big advantage of the Vuzix is you have your hands free.
Yes.
So I can do work, I can, use tools at the same time and still having a camera and mounted to my head.
Which another advantage of Vuzix model that you use, I don't know about other Vuzix models, was that you could actually mount it on any glasses.
Yeah, that's a big advantage. So, but also it's complicated. So let's start with the advantages of the Vuzix. So it's Android. You can use the existing software. Mm-hmm. Just write a new UI layer for this. You have to experiment a lot with the font sizes. You have to experiment a lot with general user interface elements, because the Vuzix basically has some kind of touch screen or gesture screen, which doesn't work so well. But there are three hot buttons or four, and you can use it. It's basically Android back button, menu button, and they are doing everything with those three buttons. So if you're designing software for smart glasses or for the Vuzix, you always have to make sure to offer very limited user interfaces, because you can't add complexity to the software there, because nobody wants to use those buttons for more than back or okay or next step or something like this.
And I mean, if you already have your hands free, why would you use them for button pressing? I assume that you're using them for going through steps
Exactly.
of the process.
Exactly. And what we did is, we have a very complex smartphone user interface where you can actually, use all those gestures and stuff like this. You have menus, everything you would expect from a modern smartphone app in 2016 or 2017. And our Vuzix software is very limited by purpose, because we see that the expert in the service office needs to guide the technician on site. Just an element for us to transfer the screen. And in our software, you can always do a snapshot and do annotations on it. And the snapshot can be triggered from remote. So the expert can say, okay, move to this direction. I will do a snapshot, and then you transfer it to my side, and I can do annotations on my personal computer with my mouse or with my, device, whatever the expert wants to use. And in this case, if I'm doing whiteboard or snapshot annotations, they're transferred to the Vuzix display, and I can see what the expert is, trying to show me. But I can't draw really in this image because I have only 3 buttons.
Exactly.
And very limited, sensor or gesture tool on the device. But these are the current limitations. So don't show too much information.
Yeah.
And use it to display information.
But did you also maybe experiment with other glasses, or is it Epson, or is maybe more?
Yeah, but they had not the actual performance. So if you do the live video, you need a big processing power. You have to do encoding on your device. You have to do stuff like this. And of course, we could maybe just transfer the whole bitstream of the camera, but then our approach to transfer the image with the best bandwidth possible.
Couldn't you have some kind of modem in between, or some smartphones, a Windows
conversion? Yeah, and then you have the situation that it's very complicated to set up.
so you have to
think about the complete process. So Vuzix was a device for us, which is okay. It's not ideal, but it's okay. And another big advantage was because a customer of ours said, okay, that's our target platform for the future.
Did you stick to the Vuzix in
2015
then?
No, in 2015 we experimented with it. We shipped it in 2016, the software.
Mm-hmm.
And from our point of view, it's just another Android device with a small screen.
Yeah. Now, is the Vuzix augmented reality?
No. I wouldn't say so. Because with just a screen in front of your eye, which could be also a smartphone, it's not real augmented reality, or at least this is a kind of a definition you have to find for yourself.
Yeah, sure, but you would say it's just some kind of mixed or whatever.
Yeah, what you can do is, of course, maybe putting elements on your video stream, putting there, for example, some objects, stuff like this.
Yeah, okay, but that would require some kind of recognition of your space. So in general, the device is just a screen, right?
It's a small screen, with 2013 hardware in it, I would say. And, the processor is very slow, so don't expect too much of it. See it as a device to get information.
What are the advantages of smart glasses over augmented glasses?
What are the disadvantages?
No, the disadvantages are just too easy to go with. So that's why I'm asking a difficult question.
So I think
Chris, you're literally asking what's the advantage of the first iPhone compared to the newest iPhone.
Well, there must be some. Like, it's cheap.
Well, I think the first iPhone now sells for billions of dollars on eBay.
Well,
it's a rare thing.
Smart glasses are not yet selling for millions of dollars, so they are not collectibles yet.
I think we're still doing the transition. HoloLens is somehow there, but somehow it isn't. So
it's an R&D device.
You mentioned the HoloLens. The HoloLens is not the only device out there. We have the Meta 2. We have the HoloLens.
Where is the Meta 2? Then the next question would be, where's the Meta 2? So it's not. I cannot buy it now. And
Meta, we are still waiting.
Dear Meta, you have a great device.
We connected you to this lovely guy. You know.
I'm really looking forward to the Meta.
Sure, everyone is looking forward. Look. Microsoft is a big, huge company, right? If they would have a delay, Meta, we met the guys, to be honest, and I really love their hardware, and they're a young startup, It happens with hardware. Some of the supply chain deliveries, decides this cable is not good anymore.
Meta is a little special because they do everything themselves.
Exactly.
They do hand tracking, they do SLAM, they do glasses, they do hardware and software alone, so it's justifiable.
It's a tough business they're doing, but again, there's not only just Meta and HoloLens, there's Duckery,
okay,
with their 30,000 last things they told me, i7 based smart augmented reality glasses, something with
helmet,
infrared camera, it's a helmet. And I think there are a few other devices, right?
You could technically use a smartphone,
lots of stuff,
but I think that's why I say you can use a lot, and there are some devices which might be available on the market. But the other thing is, if you're working with industries or machine or manufacturers of complex machines, they want to have reliable hardware. And so I want to say, okay, where can I buy the hardware? Is there a German or European company which helps me?
For smart glasses, do you also have to have them certified right now for industry in Germany? Or
Sometimes, if you are using ethanol platforms, for example, I think you need some kind of explosive-proof devices that it's not flammable, something like this. You have always to deal with some kind of certifications in Germany.
Definitely.
But this is why I say we're still in the phase of transition.
It's so strange, to be honest, that I just had this discussion on the Dreams Hack on the weekend when I was with few people, actually, that virtual reality is mostly pushed currently by this big gaming, right? And I mean, hence, those big hardware manufacturers don't really listen too much to the needs of the industry yet because, you know, this big gaming train is pushing everything, but it makes the hardware for us cheaper, the development easier, whatever. So we are hugely profiting from it, even if we have certain downsides. Okay, but with augmented reality, like anyone who I talk to mostly agrees that it will be the industry who will first implement it. Maybe that's the reason why it's so slow and not so developing.
Sure, I think so. That's the reason. Industries are slow, but if they are pushing forward, they are doing it in a big way.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the ThyssenKrupp video.
No.
It's a great video. I think it's still in marketing or something like this video, so be careful what you say there.
Take it with a grain of salt.
But ThyssenKrupp showed us on the video how they are trying to utilize the HoloLens in the future and how their technicians are supported by the device in every way possible. Of course, this is the future vision, but... Mm. They are really investing a lot in those technologies. So do others. And industries are thinking in the way that, okay, what will be this, my next 50 steps? But they think, okay, let's do one step, let's do the next step, let's do the next step, let's do the next step. And finally, we have, of course, invested a lot of money, but we are there. So we have really learned from all of our mistakes. Mm-hmm. We did every step by ourselves. And we ran from project to project to project, and then they see actual results and they can use it on a, you know, maybe world level. So if they are operating in a global
level. And I mean, the other problem is that when you want to build a device for industry, it usually has to have much higher standard of the materials that you're using. So you cannot produce a cheap device, meaning that you cannot iterate over the device many more times. Like we just had the podcast with Sasha Tweny and Robert Scobo, where we discussed why Insta360 is so successful right now, because they can iterate in during 1 year with multiple versions of the hardware. And so they can respond much faster to the feedback from users. Well, but if you have HoloLens, they have so much behind that you cannot.
Congratulations
change it so
to
fast.
InstaVR.
Insta360,
yes. My experience, for example, with Duckree is I talk to them on the Hanover Messe and they write me emails from time to time. I talk to them, but I'm not willing to go to my CEO of my company and suggest him. In my sane state, we are going to buy a device for 30,000 euros that none of our customers really currently will get, and we will just start to develop it with it something. I mean, it's a huge investment, and I'm not understanding why we as a developers, right? And I guess you also don't get your devices for free, right? I mean, we are, where I work, right? We are, don't even focus on AR, right? We focus mostly on VR, but I mean, I guess you also don't get your devices for free. You have to buy them. And if you see how the gaming industry, for example, is being pushed by Oculus and HTC, they get money, they get devices, and it's also way more affordable to start it. So, I mean, okay, it's great that a big company like ThyssenKrupp can get their devices and test internally, but as with smartphones and before with phones, if 10 people on the whole earth use a mobile network, they all need the antennas and they have to pay for it. If 2 billion people are using mobile networks, the antenna per person is getting cheaper. And the same thing will be with augmented glasses. I mean, if they all have their own custom hidden solution here and there, it won't scale. And if it doesn't scale, there is no disruption possible.
Yeah, look at the price for the HoloLens, 3,000 euros.
And that's the cheapest. You actually have to pay 5 if you use it for industrial usage.
And that's even, I don't even understand the options there. So this is the developer version, this is the commercial exactly. version, but in the commercial version, you're not even allowed to distribute this hardware. This is ridiculous.
It's also Microsoft. They could just as well subsidize the price. They're not a small company.
Okay, guys, the hardware is really in a certain way astonishing. I mean, they had a lot of research that goes into the depth sensors. Really great. You see the Kinect research. The screen, well, I like the screen for Meta more, but it's still curved glass. It's very well manufactured, whatever. But my problem with it is I don't get their strategy. What are they aiming at? I mean, they won't earn on those devices anyway. They won't sell enough of those. That's out of the question. So even if they charge double the money and the same people would get it, okay, no change there. So why don't they rather distribute them? And I think they're just too scared to give it too fast away.
I think so too.
Because people get disappointed with the Google Glass, right? I mean, there was a huge shitstorm about it.
So yeah, maybe that can be a good approach. So we all know Microsoft and we know all of their failures and their good sides. So for example, so and I think what they're doing now is, of course, they had a video, of course, which explains the HoloLens, and it promised us a lot. But I think most of it is possible. Of course, we don't have the field of view, for example, in the HoloLens right now. But the basic use case where I can put all my browser windows in the room and I don't need multi-monitors anymore, stuff like this, is just great. And I think they delivered those features. And what they now remember the Kinect video back in the days when they introduced Kinect, and when Peter Molyneux showed us how to speak with that little guy, and the perfect AI, and it was like this: the world is, or the Kinect world is my permanent companion, stuff like this, and it nuts. Totally nuts. What was the Kinect in the end? Just a new, iToy.
Even though what Microsoft itself, which we mentioned a few episodes ago, and also other people achieved with this device, it's groundbreaking. Because as we also spoke with the Leapmotion, Alex Kogan, it's not so much about the hardware, but about the software that you build on top of it. Because the hardware might be, a little bit limited. It's fine if you do a lot of great engineering. And what came out on research papers from the HoloLens team, I mean, it's astonishing.
Of course.
But they were promised.
So, and I think they want to get this right, and they're practicing maybe a lot nowadays, and they encourage people to use it. And I don't know if any of you had the chance to look into the developer materials they have on the website, and they are great. And for a first prototype, you have to how to set up my first project, how to do this, how to do that. And my favorite application on the HoloLens is the Star Explorer, Star Map Explorer. What's the name of it? I don't know this map, Star Explorer, where you have the galaxy, solar system, in your own room. And this was a moment where I thought, wow, this is so cool. I've waited for this since Star Trek.
And you place Jupiter on Petr's head, and I place another planet on your head, or I just move the world in the way that you change into the planet.
The fun part is when you see what Microsoft those days does with VR, they certainly have partners, OEMs, that will generate or build or produce those VR headsets that are kind of Microsoft headsets. And they have also an open approach, at least they promised it, but for the HoloLens. I mean, technically, you could take the operational system from the HoloLens, put it on your own HoloLens device that you built, and just run it, right?
Is that so? Is that
yes,
the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it is. But this was my question. Do you know of anyone who actually is going to build another HoloLens?
I think Microsoft was building, or is going to build, those small HoloLens devices which are bound to a cable. And I think they're almost for India and, not too much economically involved countries. And they're building this, what's the name of it? Maybe we should Google it. But they are building this holo stuff. And those devices are a lot cheaper. And they are basically using the same technology, the same programming, and
the Holo OS environment.
I think so. And those devices are a lot cheaper, but of course bound to a cable, which limits the amount of use cases. Mm-hmm. But in this Holo world, I think they plan a lot.
Do you think that's the future of computation for people? I mean, not the future of computation, the future of user interface. Let me rephrase it. Air versus VR. Who wins the ultimate championship?
I'm going home. I'm triggered.
I think both have use cases which are suited more for the specific case. So imagine the HoloLens as the replacement for my monitor at home or mm-hmm. in my office. So right now I have two monitors and a keyboard and a mouse, and I put my Word on the one screen, my Sublime text or IDE on the other screen, and I'm bound to this two-dimensional mm-hmm. Screen. Mm-hmm. We're still doing the same like back in the 80s, basically.
Yeah. And also now we have curved screens.
Well, okay.
I saw on the weekend one from Samsung, and I like them.
You can actually build a whole workstation with curved screens, like put screens all around you and
put it in the right angle so you have a curve.
Yes, no, you can do it, but the problem there, Imho, in my humble opinion, is that you have to rotate your head. Like you can't really go with your eyes over the whole surface.
Well, the point is that you place behind you a different cluster of programs and some other cluster in front of you, so you actually have multiple workstations that you can change between fluently.
Yes, but if you have, for example, three screens in a row that are curved, and I just saw it, can't really look at them without turning your head, as I would do when I program. When I program, I can just look at those.
Yeah, but screens. You need to adjust your use cases and your setup to your setup.
Okay, again, if I buy Samsung screens, I have to drop my job and do something else that fits more to the
Samsung. No, you just need to reconsider how you do your job. Like there was a software called Envelope VR, where you could actually put screens all around you.
In VR,
they were still thinking in 2D. You could just place screens around you. And just recently they announced that they're closing the company.
Yeah. Well, but you're not closing, right? You're quite flourishing well.
Yeah, so we have big plans with AR.
Can you share any of those, or are they undisclosable? Disclosure.
Let me try to explain. Of course, we're trying to transfer our existing system to HoloLens. And all the other mixed reality, augmented reality devices, which might come and which our customers wants to use them. The HoloLens is quite heavy on your head.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have a long battery runtime, right?
It's okay. I think it's
how long
okay.
is it?
So we had the HackOS here in the weekend, I think 3 hours or more. I don't know.
Okay, that's you don't have really strong hardware. It's just an Atom processor, right? That is mostly, stuffed with calculating everything around.
I think next hardware iterations will be a lot better.
Yeah.
But it's just a start.
Do you believe, just a side question, that let's say we take it, do you consider that a solution as maybe the Meta 2 with the backpack, for example, from XMG, that I have in mind when our Meta arrives to test out, is on the one hand more long time runnable because you can just hotswap the batteries, on the other hand, also more powerful? I mean, you have an i7 and a 1070 inside. So you could just do way more powerful stuff. Or do you consider that already to be bulky?
There might be use cases where the Meta 2 backpack thing would be better than the HoloLens. I think so. But I'm in all use cases where I imagine technicians which have to crawl under specific parts of the machine, they are even lying on the floor or on the ground. So I don't think that a backpack would be,
With some nice pillow in the back, maybe some wheels so that they can just roll.
No, wait, guys, the Dacry helmet is actually certified, at least that's what they told me, I have no idea, that if a brick falls on your head, you're protected. You could technically use the backpack also as a protection.
Yeah, but it's not for maintenance.
For maintenance, it's very difficult.
I can imagine.
I can see here the only solution are the glasses, the actual glasses form factor, and with some better materials than cheap plastic.
Yeah.
Why not just give every guy who is doing maintenance the spectacles, give them Snapchat, and they can just snap each other stuff, right? No?
Cheap plastic.
No, cheap plastic, I think cheap plastic might not even be the problem. The hardware is cheap enough to buy a new device. So why are companies using normal smartphones or just iPads, even for maintenance? Because if an iPad drops to the ground and even the display breaks, it's cheap enough to buy a new one, and I can go to the next store and pick up one.
Easy to maintain, easy to exchange.
And we are not there yet with glasses, not even with Vuzix. It's still, I think, 900 euros. So if you want to buy it, it's also cheap plastic. It's okay if you don't need to, or if you don't work in tough environments. But I think the HoloLens is manufactured in okay-ish. We're still not there yet to have.
I mean, considering HoloLens being $3,000 for a single model, I would still not take it anywhere where I need to wear a helmet.
Yeah, but I think that would mostly be because I have 3,000 euros in my hand. I have and I'm scared or too scared to drop it on my head.
Actually, that's what we heard from engineers. We talked to some engineers and we talked to other companies that work with engineers. And the main reason why engineers and maintenance workers did not want to use glasses on the shop floor was that they don't want to break them. And they are much better with just a tablet. For exactly the reason that you described.
Just put some nice sleeve on it that is protective, you know.
Yeah, the problem with sleeves is, again, you have to cover, or maybe your glasses are covered, so you don't see anything anymore. It's very difficult. I think this is a very complex question, how to ruggedize those glasses.
Mm. But when do you think that the whole topic will kick off from just being a marketing gag to, and right now we are beyond it, but to actually something that people will really use in their work?
I don't know if a big manufacturers of cars in Germany, one manager of them told me that they are planning to use AR on a regular basis in the whole company in 2019. Mm-hmm. So let's experiment in 2017 with the software. So we still have to find the best solutions, how to use it, another problem is if I open up a lot of applications on the HoloLens, for example, where's my task management? It's very difficult to get rid of all those tasks. And this is a big, really single big issue.
So it's not calculation, but user interface thing.
We need to find better ways to interact with the devices. And Microsoft did a very good job for the first user interface.
Also, a comment from our colleague Thomas when he was, trying the HoloLens. Oh dear, Microsoft just couldn't get rid of the click.
Yeah. No. This is Microsoft we're talking about. And they couldn't get rid of the start menu.
Which is quite hilarious. I mean, also, just Windows running on it, technically.
Also, entering numbers is a pass.
Okay, but the text input is a problem for the whole AR industry.
Okay, guys, text input technically could be solved through audio recognition.
Cortana works pretty well. We have experimented with the audio interface.
It's already quite good.
It's good. So, it's still Microsoft somehow? No, with all the Microsofty things.
Yeah, still a big monster looming over you.
But hey, maybe Apple is going to come, so many rumors.
Another monster.
Well, I go back. But that's another topic.
I am sincerely there with you. And shame on Apple.
Okay.
Do not get triggered. Let's not get off topic.
We're not a Mac podcast.
maybe back to the HoloLens. I think we have also discussed again about the roadmap where we are with and Microsoft don't label it augmented reality. They are labeling it mixed reality.
Which is wrong, but yes.
Blah, blah, whatever reality we are in. augmented or mixed reality. I think 2017 will be a year of experimenting with this with the software, and we are finding some nice solutions. And I think some clever people will publish
very nice ideas and very nice concept how to interface those devices. And then to adapt those new, you know, patterns, user interface patterns, we will maybe need another year. And then if we are working with industries and not on consumer level or on consumer, well, not with consumer markets, for example, we need applications. So we have this, all those very complex industry softwares there, and we need somehow to get the data out of the software. We need to interface existing solutions. Mm-hmm. And one company does this way, one company does it the other way. One company stores maybe files on a file server. One company is using SAP.
Well, it sounds like a lot of butt pain.
Of course. And now you have to find some clever interfaces, some nice proof of concept how to interface with already existing IT infrastructure. Yeah. And this is what we need to do. And this is always on a project level. We are not talking about... No, I think we usually companies are thinking the way it's like, okay, let's do this, what I mentioned in the beginning, one step at a time. So one project to interface maybe SAP data or a relevant machine data. Then the other approach would be, okay, how can we utilize our ticket system with the with the system? So
boring.
This is a lot of enterprise software discussion, or there are a lot of enterprise software discussions, and we need to solve all those problems.
Yeah.
And there will be a market only for those problems, because people want to see benefits from augmented reality devices.
What do you think? Will companies that actually are already and will adapt the VR technologies have a big advantage compared to their competition?
Yeah.
So you would say that if a company right now is not doing it, they should hurry up, otherwise they are gone.
Yeah. I this is also a very conservative industry here, especially in Germany, when we are dealing with manufacturers of machines, for example. The big advantage when a company is already using VR technologies is that they have 3D models of everything, and they can utilize those. And of course, usually the manufacturers have also CAD data, stuff like this, which they can extract out of a CATIA and stuff like this. But it is more challenging because a lot of CATIA data is so complex. You have, you know, to reduce the complexity of the model, and you know, you have to go a long way until the object can actually be deployed to your device. And if they already did this with VR, they have, of course, an advantage, and they even did. And they have the know-how already.
We should not forget that there are some things that are much easier, more efficient to do in a 2D format, just on a screen.
Yeah.
There are some things to do in virtual reality that you would be actually distracted by trying to put it in the real world. And then there is augmented reality solutions. So it's always important to keep in mind, what do you actually need?
Exactly. So one use case might be, for example, for a company, technical documentation on screen, on site. So I'm moving, I'm the near of a machine, and all those context data is flying around me, and I can see actual live data out of the machine. And this is so connected with the also slow moving topic of the industry 4.0, because we're on IoT thing, that we really need access to the data. And, you know, this all, you know, all those fields are connected, and and we have to see how the industry will adapt to it. And as I say, I don't think it will be used on a broad scale until 2019.
Well, unfortunately, to whomever I talk who is not as, you know, deep inside the topics as we all three, and I mean, we are more in VR, you and I are. A lot of people out there believe that it's there. It's coming. Yeah, why do I need VR? Why do I use this? You know, augmented reality is coming. Everyone is speaking about it. Apple is planning something huge. I read rumors. And it's always fascinating for me to see, you know, those expectations that are built up. I don't know by whom. But on the other hand, maybe a little bit conservative, but quite realistic.
Let's blame it on media.
Well, I'm not sure if it's the media. I mean, the media can only, you know, report what the companies are promising. I mean, you can definitely be a little bit more investigative, but if a company says, okay, it's coming out, like Magic Leap, I mean, come on, $1.8 billion. Do you expect Magic Leap tomorrow in your work environment?
Nope.
Do you think something magical will come out of it?
Well, no. you know, with the latest stories of Magic Leap, my personal hype feeling has been reduced a lot. I still think they might produce a great device, and I'm hoping for it because competition is so important. So
okay, but listen, even the HoloLens itself is nothing magical. I mean, they have been evolving how the Kinect tracks since years. And the way that they now can track the room with two of those Kinect-like sensors is nothing impressive on the technical level, but impressive that they could shrink it so much. The screen itself, others can do it too. Yep. The form factor, others can. Even if you collect $1.8 billion, well, you can't reinvent the wheel, right?